This is The Think Tank, talking about the major political, economic, and social issues of the week. With Dr. Mike O'Neill and hosted by Mike Russell. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com. The Think Tank.
All right. You're hearing it. You heard it before the debates this week. You've heard polling. As a matter of fact, the Republican debates, who got in and who got to participate in the debates and who got kicked out to the kids' table was based purely on polling. So we just go along with the numbers. I have, at least, and I'm guilty of it. I've gone along with the numbers. Oh, that guy's at 25%. Man, he's leading the pack at 25%. I should believe that 25% of America wants them, right? Yeah, turn the mic on, Doc. That one over there. There we go.
25% of the Republican electorate.
Right. Okay. What I'm saying, now you know that, and that's how we're going to get to this year. You know that because Doc O'Neill, for those that don't know, that's his life. His life has been polling. He is a pollster. He actually takes these polls. He was the one putting up these types of numbers. So what I wanted to do, so we would all make sense of this, so we knew what we were looking at when we see the 25%. This guy's only 3%. What margin of error? We're going to talk about that today. We're going to back up this polling and find out where it came from. So let's start there, Doc, yeah. If we could. Where did this all start? Who said, you know what, we're just going to ask everybody and give everybody an idea of what's going on?
Let's start out by giving credit where it's due. The idea for this show is our ace producer, Rosemary Scarfo, who said, well, why didn't you talk about this? And I said, oh, I never thought of that.
Okay, just because she's listening right now, is that why? You know, kissing up.
Kiss up.
Jeez, man. That's next level kissing up right now.
Let me roll you back into the early 20th century. Oh, 1920.
Wow. Okay.
There is an outfit called the Literary Digest. Very, very widely read. And started putting out a little clip-out survey into their magazine, which had about 10 million subscribers back then. That's
Jeez,
a big deal.
That is huge. Okay. Yeah.
And they clip it in, and every year they got about 2.5 million responses. They predict the 1920 election on the nose.
20, really?
24, 28, 32. They are the standard. 1932, they got it right. 1936, prediction comes in. Landslide election for Alf Landon.
Wow. Oops.
Oops.
Yeah.
So somebody took a look at what they're actually doing. And okay. It turns out that how many people you interview is a pretty small, it matters to have a certain number, but in the scheme of things, if it's a biased sample, it doesn't matter how many people you have.
Right. If you ask my kid, if you poll my children, who's the best dad in the planet, I'm 100%. I'm polling at 100%. It's scientific
fact. That depends on the age of your kids, and that's until they become teenagers, and then it drops precipitously.
Okay, got it.
Okay, in 1936, there's a fella out there who has a different notion. His name is George Gallup, and he says, no, we have to do it by a smarter method. We need quota sampling. Okay, here's what happened to the Literary Digest. The underlying vote, the relationship between social class, education, income, and voting was virtually non-existent until 1936. In other words, it wasn't predictive, mm-hmm. Okay? The Literary Digest is a very upscale, I mean, just as the name would imply, the appeal is highly educated people. In 1936, for the first time in American pop history, that group goes big time Republican. And that's why the Literary Digest became biased. By the way, that surprised a lot of people who think, well, Roosevelt was elected by a groundswell of the underclass. That was true in 36, but it was not true of his early election. That's why the 32 prediction was good.
Okay.
What George Gallup says, we have to do something a little bit smarter. We need to make sure we got so many people of lower education, so many higher, so many blacks, so many whites. He got all these little silos, and he sends interviewers out and with instructions to fill all of the demographic silos. And this works reasonably well. It certainly
was it to the numbers of the Literary Digest? Was it to that number?
Oh, nowhere near.
Okay.
The Literary Digest did 2.5 million. He's doing a few thousand.
Okay. See,
okay.
All right. Here we go.
And this proves why once you get to a certain base number, it's the number is very, it's a pretty minor part of your statistical accuracy. It's how you get the people. Why you can do a perfectly good national sample with 1,500.
Okay.
If you get the 1,500 correctly selected.
Okay.
This works pretty good until 1948. Okay, remember? Dewey beats Truman.
Dewey beats Truman. Oh, okay. That's right, yes. Well, I know that from the beginning of Cheers.
This is a further refinement, and essentially they made two mistakes. One is quota sampling turns out to be better than just taking any old person that you happen to encounter, but it has a flaw that within a demographic category, you might get only one kind of person. Okay. Mm-hmm. So if I get all the, I could get, you know, so many women and so many blacks and so many young people, so many old people. And if they're all Fox News viewers, that's going to skew in a certain direction.
Right.
Okay. So you, there is a way to get around that, and that's called probability sampling. Quota sampling is based on judgment. Probability sampling is a method for selecting people that allows the selection of people absolutely by chance. In other words, you and I and everybody else has exactly the same probability of being selected into the sample.
Okay, now quota sampling was what Gallup was doing.
It was an improvement over the predecessor, but it still had a potential flaw in it.
But then, okay, but then Literary Digest was the
Literary Digest is just, no, it wasn't random at all.
It wasn't random.
It was whoever happened to send it in. That's not random. That's not statistically random. That's what I'd call haphazard.
Okay? Oh, okay.
It's like whoever, it's a volunteer sample. Okay, mm-hmm. It's whoever chooses to sampling. By the way, to foretell, that's the problem with a lot of internet stuff. Phil, is that it's who chooses to respond? That's the old Literary Digest, the worst of all possible worlds. The second flaw, and this is a big one. You'll laugh at this one. How from a current day perspective, at that time, Gallup and everybody else believed, well, you know, people make up their mind by September. So they stopped polling in September.
Ah, nice move.
You laugh at that one. It is so absurd. But they were convinced that that was good enough. And you know what? From 1936 to 1948, it kind of worked.
Yes.
Well, in 1948, there was very much a last term trend in the favor of Truman. And so Truman comes out of what took everybody by surprise. That was the surprise, was that nobody bothered to track October and November.
Yeah, who cares about October and November? Let's do this. Here's what we're doing. We're breaking down the poll numbers. When we see them through the campaign, we see them all the way through the election, we're going to see this poll, that poll. We're now telling you what those polls are, where they came from, and how they work with our very own pollster, Doc O'Neill. Next.
The Think Tank. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Not just an outdoor and political junkie, Doc. I actually am a little numbers nerd. I do. I love this kind of stuff. I love stats. I love figures. I love to dig into things. And that was your world for so many years. And you're taking your time, and we appreciate this, to break down exactly what polling is, where polling comes from, and what these numbers mean that we're seeing
and
right now.
And we got you to 1948, and I tell you how Gallup blew it in 1948.
Dang it,
well,
Gallup.
Well, there was, and so did everybody else, there was one outfit that got it right. There were a bunch of really top-notch scholars that coalesced at the University of Michigan.
Okay.
And they were doing, among other things, economic surveys. And they were polling throughout the fall of 1948. And as just kind of a throwaway, they threw on a couple of political questions on the end.
Why not? For fun.
Okay. And they used something called probability sampling, which I alluded to early. Probability sample takes judgment out of it. You have to set up a scheme whereby everybody has exactly the same chance of being polled. And now, statistical footnote here. Actually, it doesn't have to be the same. It has to be calculated. If I overrepresent some groups, I can fix that with weighting. But for all intents and purposes, think of it as the end product. Everybody had an equal chance of being selected. No judgment. You will, if you have a large enough sample and you do it right, you'll represent every group perfectly within the electric. University of Michigan nailed it on the nose. And then there is a big Social Science Research Council investigation. What happened? How'd they get it wrong? You know, what happened? And basically, that was the end of quota sampling. Okay. And then Gallup and everybody else adopts probability sampling. Okay. And it works. And what happens now, we go through the 40s and 50s, and the next big change in polling comes in the 1960s, when all, up to that time, it was all door-to-door. You couldn't do it by the phone because you had to buy a sample. Only rich people had phones.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. In the 1960s, by the middle and late 1960s, phone subscribership in America becomes nearly universal. AT&T is the monopoly. They charge a fortune for long-distance rates, for example, and that money is used to subsidize low-end phone service. So basically, everybody has a phone in their house. Black dial, all the same, not a lot of features, indestructible, but everybody's got a phone.
75 okay. pounds, yeah.
So now you can phone over the telephone. And this is really the beginning of the golden age of polling. Because as somebody who has managed these things, if I have a group of interviewers and I have them in my phone room, I can listen in on them. I can hyper train them. They're right there. I have silent monitoring. I listen to my train them. I get them to do it exactly right. In contrast to sending people out into the field, mm-hmm. okay, and
they're
doing interviews,
they're doing.
I can train them. I can kind of, but I'm not there to listen. It's a whole lot harder. And by the way, way more expensive. To send people physically out.
Oh, I can imagine.
To
yeah.
knock on a door. I mean, you send out to knock on somebody's door and then they're not home. You know what you have to do? You go back to that house. You don't replace them.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay?
Yeah.
That cost a lot of money.
Sure.
In the phone, it cost another 30 seconds to redial.
Right.
Over and over and over until you get them. So this phones become ubiquitous and polling really gets easy. And all of the problems are solvable. For example, we used to get asked, well, what about people with unlisted numbers? We get them too. It's a method called random digit dialing. I know what all the prefixes are. I know where they are. They're geographically located. I put random digits after those numbers.
And you find the people.
And I get everybody. And then I manually screen out things like businesses and stuff like that. There's a relatively simple method to do it. And at this time, the population is highly cooperative with surveys. We're getting 80 to 90% of the people.
Really?
Yes. To respond.
They're crazy.
60s and
yeah.
70s. Okay. And the story is going to change here.
Yeah, I bet.
Because what happens is the response rate from about the 1960s on goes down by about 1 or 2% a year. Mm. In the beginning, it's not a big deal. We went from 90 to 80, it still works. 80 to 70, it still works. And we're getting lower and lower in the reaches. A few years ago, you're down around 30. And mathematically, you start to get concerned about does it still work? But the polls are still coming dead on. And you say, well, if you do it right, the non-response, does it, as long as the non-response isn't correlated with what you're measuring, you're okay. And then they plummet further and further and further. And we have the potential of problems. Then you get you throw in something else and then the next people start dropping their phones and getting cell phones. And the problem is with sampling part of selecting people, you need it geographic based in order to do it. So it gets dicier and dicier, and it gets more and more expensive.
But then you're back to if you're going to start to worry about cell phones, when cell phones mm-hmm. first came out mm-hmm. and people started rolling around with cell phones, it was the wealthy. You're back to
yep.
the old, we couldn't start doing the surveys over the phones because only the rich people had phones.
Well, you don't do it only cell phone. You start okay. to have cell phone supplements.
Yeah, the big brick cell phones.
And here's the big yeah. problem. Initially in the cell phones, people being charged per minute and they don't want to answer on the cell phones.
Right.
Now it's virtually unlimited. So non-response becomes an issue. By the way, we move up, say, to, one other thing you start to get these robocalls. People are trying to figure out how they can do it cheap. And so we can get a machine to make the calls and a recorded voice, and we can cut our cost by like 95% because we get rid of all the people.
When did those start?
Those started maybe 20 years ago.
Okay.
And then they take off big time. And they contribute to the non-response problem because people are irritated. The volume of all of a sudden something that costs you $20,000 to $25,000 to do, you can do for $500. Guess what happens to the number of surveys?
I can imagine.
Goes through the ceiling.
Yeah.
Okay. And then we hit kind of what's the golden age of polls. And so the number of polls goes way up and probably was at its high point 2008, 2012. There's one fella who's not a pollster. He's an economist and a real clever kid, Nate Silver. starts compiling all these, and he starts taking, there's so many polls out there. You couldn't have done this in 2008, and he was the first guy to figure it out. I can take all the polls, throw them into a model, average them, look at things like house effect, like maybe somebody's sampling is a little bit skewed, Republican or Democrat. But we can measure that. I mean, it's okay if you've got a company that consistently measures a 5% excess for Republicans, we just correct it. We just take 5% off the R side of that, and we got to, you know, as long as they're consistent. He figures out who's accurate, who isn't, and then you start looking at why. And Nate does predictions in 2008 and 2012. In 2008, he hits 49 states. In 2012, he hits all 50.
Okay.
The only, actually, his only miss was a quirky little thing in 08, Indiana. The weirdest thing is very red state, and went for Obama. And I think it was a bunch of Obama supporters in Chicago had time on their hands, and they trucked
those
over.
Those dang Obama
they
supporters.
They trucked over to Gary, Indiana, and they beat the poll
yeah,
numbers.
Yeah,
so,
happens.
So, but here's the problem. Okay, so he is highly accurate. Now I think we're at the, for decades, people are not believing the polls. Now I think they believe them too much. Because the underpinnings of good polling is just going away.
So let's talk about that. Let's talk about that when we come back. Let's talk about the impact on polling now, the impact of those polls, the impact of those numbers on the way we vote, on the way we buy, on the way we do darn near everything. More with Doc O'Neill, KTAR News.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
All right, let's keep on the poll train here as we look into what all these mean. The numbers mean, the polls mean. We've been going through a history of polling with Doc O'Neill, as this is what he has done for the majority of his career, is be a pollster. Now, we're up to at least this modern era.
We're in the 2000s. We're okay. In the 21st century, and
thank
I'm
goodness.
Looking back, having at this point been in the business like 30, 40 years, and for most of that period, the general public probably doesn't have enough faith in polls relative to how much has been justified by their actual track record. 2008, 2012, Nate Silver, and then a couple of other people replicate what he's doing, and they all come up more or less with the same answers, and they're all dead on. And I think right now we're at a moment, because the underpinnings of good polling are getting more and more difficult, we probably have too much faith in the polls.
Okay.
For the first time, it's kind of flipped over, because the track record, remember, was very good because most people were cooperating. And then the cooperation rate slips down and slips down and slips down. It's still kind of working. And then you get robo-polls, which are like dirt cheap, and they start to proliferate. So the polls themselves are not as good. And I think some of the people, there's actually good evidence that some of the people doing robo-polls are kind of conforming their numbers to the polls that were done right.
With these robo polls, how many dials does this robo machine have to make to get 10 people to answer? Because I wouldn't in a thousand years start answering questions that some machines ask.
You have identified the problem. The answer is 100 to 1.
100 to 1.
Which means,
and who is that one, by the way?
And what it, yeah, absolutely. And how representative are, now we are gone full circle. It's the Literary Digest all over again.
Wow.
That's a volunteer sample. It's built on a foundation of sand. By the way, even robo balls, for the most part now, have been eliminated, because you cannot use an automated method to dial a cell phone. And you now
really
can't do a decent poll without having predominantly cell phones.
How can you not use an automated method to dial a cell phone? Is it logistically
law,
or is it legally?
There
law, we go. Law.
Against the law, big time penalties. Even to the point where in many of these phone rooms, almost all of the big ones, they had automatic dialers just to connect you with a live operator. In other words, it's a person's going to call you, but they use something called predictive dialing. They dial the number first, and after you say hello, then they connect you there's a 2 second delay.
Oh yeah,
the gap is because they're dialing 30 numbers. They got 10 interviewers, and they know by probability that by the time you answer, there'll be somebody free almost always.
Okay.
To answer it.
Really?
Okay.
That's why I love that gap. I love that gap. Right away.
Yeah, it tells you what to do. It it has a response rate issue, but it cuts the cost of polling because you don't have to have people sitting there doing the dialing.
Sure. Okay.
And waiting for you to answer. But even that is now illegal. In other words, good polling that you can still do over the phone with a lot of difficulty has become more and more expensive. 5 years ago, everybody's answer, well, let's do, you think of yourself, by the way, it's not just political, it's also corporate. Here we want to do a study of this or that, selling a product.
Who uses Tide and who uses, yeah.
And we can do a really legitimate telephone poll. It'll take 4 weeks to do and it'll cost you $50,000. Or we can do a robo poll for $500 and give you the answer tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, the latter, I am absolutely convinced that you're going to see billion-dollar mistakes made because people don't understand the difference. They think, well, I'll take the $500 overnight. That's more attractive.
Yeah.
But that's built on a very, very shaky basis. Same thing with politics. The difference with politics is you once every 4 years or every 2 years, you get validation. You find out whether you were right. Now, for example, the polls that were done right now of who's ahead in the Republican race, we don't know whether they're right or wrong. We do know they all kind of agreed, so we tend to believe them. Mm-hmm. But we don't know whether they're right or wrong because there's no election until 16 months from now.
So here, I'm going to back it up a little bit. So you have the question of who's the young man that took all the polls and averaged them out, and who is this?
Nate Silver.
Nate Silver, correct. So Nate Silver, he kind of figured it out. I'm going to have everyone else do all the dang work.
Absolutely.
And then I'm going to take that information, all that data. So what that does in my mind, I would not want to be a polling company because this guy's just figured it out. He's just going to use my stuff. And why don't I just do what he did and take everything else and do the same thing?
Nate is, interestingly, not a pollster. He's an economist. Yes, and he figured this. He said, yeah, I'm going to treat this all as data. Now, nobody could have done that in 2008 because in order to do what he did, you needed to have a massive number of polls out there. And that didn't happen until around then.
Okay.
So, and he's the first, by the way, in 2012, there are four other main people who did more or less the same. Figured out, oh I can do that.
Sure.
What did that do to the industry then? Well, what did,
it would eliminate a lot of polls.
Well, no, because people are still doing polls for the same reasons. Now, there's the biggest problem with the polls was getting more and more of the cheapoid ones that weren't very good. He did find one outfit that was completely making them up.
Oh, well,
he did that with statistical analysis and not just from the raw number. The way you make, if you're faking it, you just make your numbers kind of like everybody else and you get reported on and all that. Well, you dig down into the crosstabs and things that you have to produce. And if you actually look at it in detail, somebody tries to fake it, you can figure that out. You got to be smart. You got to know what to look for. But, you know, if you have somebody doing a very smart statistical analysis on it and it's fake data, you're never going to get away with it.
So where do we go from here now that we're up to today?
Yeah, here's the problem. Now polls are taken as gospel and they're really not. They're the underlying basis used to be telephones and everybody will answer them. The problem for the industry is fewer and fewer people are responding, and here's the other biggie, and there is no viable alternative. If you talk about, for example, oh, go to the internet and click here.
Right.
You know, because you want to. That's literate. You're back to Literary Digest. It's the worst of all possible worlds. We don't have a good alternative. The state-of-the-art platinum standard, which, by the way, when Fox set up their standards for the ones they're going to believe, they got it appropriately. They said human dialed, real interviewers, random digit dialing, so you pick up unlisted, cell phone sample, that is the current gold standard, but even that has the potential of slipping away. The hope is that if you average enough polls up to this point in time, it's still worked out. It's okay. Still been accurate. You know, 2012 was on the nose. I think what we're going to see is a slight diminution in the accuracy over time.
But you said
I'm still going to have more comfortable with somebody who averaged 20 polls than anyone alone. So if you see one poll that's out there by itself and no one else is there, my usual response is let me wait for the next one. Maybe they picked up the beginning of a new trend, but maybe it was just plain off.
Here, before we wrap on the segment, I have to go back to the logistics here, because we talked about numbers early on. We talked about it depends on how many people you are sampling, where we talked about Literary Digest over 2 million, and that was just that was just too much. I look at a poll, and I see, you know, see whatever poll is CNN, MSNBC, Fox, whatever it is, and it says the 2,000 people surveyed or 200 people surveyed. Where's the number where I should see and go, you know what? They did a good job. That's something I could probably buy into.
Let me first answer by telling you that I have criteria that I look at, and that's maybe about eighth on the list of importance.
Really?
Okay.
Okay.
If you get a few hundred, you've got enough. If it's done right, a couple of thousand's better. That's plenty.
Where's too much?
Millions, tens of thousands.
Really?
There's absolutely nobody is if somebody's doing tens of thousands, they're doing it for purposes of telemarketing. You get some of that. What's sort of falsely labeled, it's called political telemarketing. I'm gonna do 100,000 calls, and I'm gonna say, if you knew that candidate such and such did some horrible thing, how would you feel? They're not trying to measure opinion. They're trying to create it.
Oh, okay.
If somebody did 10,000 or 100,000, they're not trying to measure. That's completely excessive. They're not doing it for purposes of measuring opinion.
All right. Well, let's talk about where we go from here, and we'll wrap up a little of this this week as well when we come back on the Think Tank, KTAR News.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We have taken you through an entire history of polling, and hold on. And the reason why we did that was because we are going to see nothing but poll results from here until Election Day. So it's good to probably know where that all came from, how it happened, and why it's important, and why you might want to roll your eyes. So, Doc, I'm going to go there. Why in the world do I, or how? Let me ask you how. How do I look at a CNN poll, and I see the results, and they have that little disclaimer, this is how they did it at the bottom, you know, it's plus, minus, margin of error, this and that. I'm talking about margin of error, too. Do not let me forget about that.
Yep.
So, getting CNN, I look at CNN, and I see that. What tells me if that's a good poll or a bad poll?
Okay. There are a number of things that are indicative. And by the way, when Fox News set up its criteria for selecting, we're going to take the five most recent polls that meet the following criteria. Their standards were absolutely appropriate. Number one, poll with live interviewers, no robocalls. Number two, random digit dialing. Sometimes people use voter lists. That can be okay. Mm-hmm. But you're starting from a list. You're not doing volunteers. You have a cell phone sample. In other words, you have to call. You can't not only sell. You need a combination of cell phone and landline, because there are people who have cell only, and that number has skyrocketed.
Yes.
There are people that have landline
there's
only.
There's 20 of them left.
And there's a lot of people that have both. But you know who those people are? They're old people.
And they vote.
And they vote. And that's actually, by the way, cell phone only samples used to be a bigger difference. They're more Democratic. Landline is more Republican. You need the appropriate balance between the two.
Right.
So, a sample size of we can get to the margin of error. If all of the other criteria were met, then sample size predicts margin of error. The misnomer, the thing that people don't understand about is margin of error only measures one thing. That is how big your sample was. It has nothing whatsoever to do with, for example, if you asked the question in a stupid fashion.
Okay,
it doesn't measure that.
Before we do that, define margin of error. Because I look at it and assume, I'll tell you from the outside. I look at it and assume if you're talking about margin of error and say it's 2-3%, right? So if Jeb Bush is at 20%, I'm saying, really, he's anywhere between 23 and 17.
Yes.
Okay. There's
a 95% chance that it's within that margin.
Okay. Got it.
And 5% of the time you're going to be off.
Well, okay.
What's called a probability distribution. Okay. It's 95% of the time you're going to be within that range. And then what gives you confidence in that is somebody else does another survey and it gets kind of approximately the same thing. And if you're trying to make the best guess as to where the truth is, in general, take an average of the two.
Okay.
Unless you learn that historically one poll has historically been more on the nose than the other, or there are things that we call house effects, which commonly would be called bias. It's wrong use of the term. But let's say One pollster has been very consistent, but you look across all their stuff, and on the average, they overrepresent Republican vote by 2%. So what Nate did, by the way, when he was going through this, he figured that out, and he said, okay, if we got a Rasmussen was out there. He had about a 5% Republican
skew. I could imagine.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
So what they did is they took his numbers, but they subtract 5% from the Republican side, and they said, this is our best estimate. There was another one, public policy polling, had a skew in the Democratic direction
right.
of about 2%. So you took their numbers, you take 2% off of it, and it's your best guess. Okay. By the way, Rasmussen was a robo-poller, and even though he was sort of the favorite of Fox News because he had a Republican skew, when Fox News set up the criteria for allowing polls sure. into their system, they wouldn't take that.
Really?
That did not qualify.
They did not take Rasmussen.
They had one of their own. Fox has, which is, of course, some of the networks do their own.
It's probably a subsidiary of Rasmussen.
No. Actually, it's an outfit called Opinion Dynamics, which is an independent company, and they've done most of the stuff for Fox News, and they're a reputable outfit.
Okay.
Basically.
All right. Nice. That's two nice things you said about Fox just in this episode.
Well,
of Think Tank.
It's factual statements. You know, I mean, their criteria was appropriate. Anybody in the business would have looked at that and said, yes.
Break it down for us.
Those are the reasonable.
Break that down for us.
What do you mean?
Their criteria for getting.
Oh, their criteria. By the way, there was one more. I told you had to have a live interview, or you had to pull from a random digit dial sample. You had to ask all the names without titles. In other words, you had to say. Jeb Bush. You didn't say Governor Jeb Bush.
Oh, okay.
Because you're matching what people will see when they vote. Okay?
Okay.
And you had to do one other thing. You had to randomize the order of the 17 names. Because if you got 17 names, I can tell you, you want to be first or last.
Absolutely.
Okay?
Right.
You randomize the order to control for that.
We do that for our children, by the way. Now, I'm trying to drive this home here. I do. When I give my kids a list of things that I want them to do, the thing I want them to do is not the first one or the last one. It's something in the middle. I make sure that because I know they're going to want to choose the ones on the ends.
There's something called order effects. The order that you present the alternatives has an impact. And if you've got 17 choices, you want to be at the first or the end, that would be a bias in favor of the people at the front or the end. They had to randomize the order in order. And if they didn't, they didn't allow it into their poll averaging. And that was highly appropriate.
I've said what I need to say about Fox News. Tip of the hat to them. They've done this well. That was impressive.
Yeah.
Because they had they owned that debate. So they could have said, they could have made any criteria they wanted to and pick the horse that they wanted to win.
And they actually had one little piece of discretion at the end, only because of the way the numbers went out. And that was.
And I don't like it, but they did it.
They could have said that Rick Perry was within the margin of error, and they could have included him as number 11 if they wanted to.
Or they would have
even though they said
Kasich we're, out.
They no, 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 no. They said we'll take our top 10, but if it's they could have said it's virtually they wouldn't have been able to take out Kasich. That would because Kasich was clearly 10. Rick Perry was number 11, but they could have argued that it's within the margin of error, so we're going to let 11 him on the stage. They couldn't have flipped him, but they could have said let's err on the side of inclusiveness, and that would have been a completely discretionary call, and no one could have questioned it because Roger Ailes, the boss over there, and Roger does what he wants.
And Roger, that's what I said. That's why I'm impressed by that, because if Roger has a horse in this race, he could have made that horse come out shiny.
Only at the margins because it came out to a virtual tie.
Okay.
Because they did say up front, we're going to take the top 10.
Right.
So
okay.
That would have permitted him to take 11 because they could have called it a virtual tie.
Before we wrap up, what do we watch out for as we move towards this election and we see these numbers and the polls and polls and polls? What do you watch out for? What are the things that say, "Well, I'm not going to listen to that"? Okay. Besides, it's on
I'll give you one real big one. Yeah. Look at the difference between a national poll, which just tells you where the whole country stands, and an Iowa poll and a New Hampshire poll. Okay. To some extent, the national polls don't matter. Because they're going to have a vote in Iowa, and somebody's going to win, and that person's getting a bump. And that's caucus. It's not even election.
Sure.
Okay. And then we're going to go to New Hampshire, and somebody's going to win there. And after New Hampshire, two tiny little states, there's only going to be three candidates that are viable left in the race.
Okay.
So people wanted to be high in national polls to get on the Fox stage, but what's going to matter is Iowa and New Hampshire, and then they're going to have three choices, and it'll be a whole new ballgame.
Understood there. But when I see this, let's get into the weeds a little bit here. When I look at this screen, whether it's on Fox, CNN, MSNBC, local news, whatever it is, when I look at the screen, is there anything I can see and go, eh, I'm not gonna pay attention?
Well, I'll tell you what, on the best end, yeah, if they say it was auto dialed, I'd be a little wary of it.
Okay.
At the high end, I'll tell you who's the best in the business. It's what used to be Gallup. Gallup was bought out about 20 years ago by a company that was out to make a lot of money. Their entire senior staff quit, and they all went to work for Pew. Pew Charitable Trust is probably the best in the business.
That's the one. Pew Research.
Not only good
go.
Numbers, but good analysis. They dig down deep.
What about the one Quinnipiac or what? Okay,
they're
say
decent.
It for me.
They're decent. It's an academic-run outfit. They use, you know, state-of-the-art methods. They're good.
So if I wanted, let's just say there. If I wanted to take an average, because now I've learned today, mm-hmm. we're going to take an average. If we want to get real numbers, best guesses, we want to take some averages.
Yep.
We go to Quinnipiac and Pew.
They wouldn't be the only one. I mean, I like Pew. Quinnipiac would definitely be a top tier outfit.
Okay, then who else? So I'm like, give me three that I can take and trust.
Give me names. I'll tell you what I think of
them. Give me names. Yeah, I don't know. Come on. I mean, Quinnipiac. I thought I had points
for that. The networks. All the networks do good stuff.
Really?
Okay, all the networks have decent stuff.
No way. Okay.
CBS, New York Times used to have their own. They were very good.
Cable networks? News networks? I mean, like
CNN's okay, too. But the other, I mean, ABC is run by, he's gone independent. Gary Lang. Langer was their pollster. He now has his own company. ABC hires him. He used to be the in-house guy. He's really good.
Nice. Okay.
But all the network stuff is good.
So bottom line for us, take an average?
Yes. Take an average. If one of them appears to show something that you haven't seen before, wait till you see a second one before you really, you know, I see something that's new. It shows maybe that's the beginning of a trend, or maybe it's an anomaly. It does happen even with very good polls. Remember I said plus or minus, but 95% of the time, which means 5% of the time you get a quirky number. Wait until you see a second one before you really believe it.
How about a bottom line from me this time? How about just do your own dang research and don't buy into a poll that what's going to tell you who you should vote for and not?
Well,
how about
a poll shouldn't tell you who you vote for.
A lot of people do.
It should absolutely not do that. It should tell you where people stand right now, whether or not you vote for them or not. That's a completely separate question, and polling should have nothing to do with that.
Hey, Doc, thanks.
Yep.
That was good. A lesson in polling from our own pollster, Doc O'Neill. Keep it right here to KTR and KTR.com for all 2016 election coverage. Hey, thanks for spending some time with us. Think Tank, KTR News.